Place names can provide interesting glimpses into history. Some are pretty obvious. Charlottesville, for instance, was named after Queen Charlotte, wife of King George III. Others are a little more obscure. I can't actually imagine how Boring Oregon, Dismal Tennessee, Hell Michigan, or Looneyville, Texas got their names. Although maybe that last one. I'm not sure I actually want to know how they got their names. And then there are places like Hopedale, Massachusetts. Hopedale got its name back in the mid-19th century. The famous universalist, the Reverend Aidan Ballou, who was third cousin once removed of the even more famous Hosea Ballou, his wife Lucy and two of their friends invested in 600 acres of land and created what they called Fraternal Community Number One. An inspiring name. Today, we would refer to it as an intentional community or a commune. The fraternal community's less formal name was Hopedale, which means roughly hope in the valley or the valley of hope. Hopedale came into being during a time when utopian communities were popping up all over the place. Places like Brook Farm, Fruitlands, New Harmony, Oberlin, Oneida, Reunion, as well as a great number of communities based on the teachings of the French philosopher Charles Fourier, called Fourier communities. This is also when the Shakers communities, most of them, were established. And I'm mentioning all of this morning because this month we've been exploring what it means to think of ourselves, we Unitarian Universalists, as a people of desire. This morning, specifically, we're asking ourselves what it means to be a people who desire to build a better world. So it's worth noting that a great many of these intentional utopian communities were founded by Universalists. Unitarians, or people who'd been influenced by the spirit of transcendentalism, people who believed that a better world was possible and set about building it. I think it's kind of funny, though, that some of the rock star transcendentalists, people like Emerson, Fuller, and Thoreau, refused to join these communities because they were too much the individualist to join any community, no matter how utopian they were. This impulse, this drive, this desire to build a world that is more fair, more just, more economically and ecologically sustainable, that is, simply put, better than the world we see around us, is part of our genetic makeup as UUs. And it's still alive today. In 2008, for instance, a group of Unitarian Universalist young adults began discussing the idea of creating an intentional community. And in February of 2011, they moved into the house that is now called the Lucy Stone Cooperative. A second cooperative house, the Margaret Mosley Cooperative, is up and running as well. These young adults are, as it was put in a UU World article, living the values and traditions of Unitarian Universalism and are focused on sustainability, spiritual practice, and social change. Of course, many of us here are only a few degrees of separation from Twin Oaks or its local sister communities, Acorn and Living Energy Farm. Several of us are involved right now in one way or another with either Eco Village or Emerson Commons. This desire to build a better world runs deep in our veins. Not all of us are able to take part in this kind of a building project. Not all of us would want to live in this kind of intentional cooperative community. Yet all of us can be involved in making the world we live in more like the world we would want to live in. Janine signed up to weave this morning because this topic of building a better world is near and dear to her heart. She has actually spent her professional career trying to make a difference. And so before I finish the sermon, I think we should hear from her.
Our dream is a world free of poverty. These words appeared over the main entrance to the World Bank in Washington, D.C., in the early years of James Wolfensohn's presidency of what insiders call the bank. The bank was chartered in 1944 as the International Bank of Reconstruction and Development and was set up primarily to help Europe rebuild from World War II, and only secondarily to assist countries to grow and develop. At that time, many developing countries were still colonies, but with the wave of independence for former colonies in the late 50s and early 60s, the development mission of the bank became its major focus. Robert McNamara, president from 68 to 81, shaped the bank to focus on poverty reduction rather than investing primarily for reconstruction or economic returns. This surprised many who had protested McNamara during his time as U.S. Secretary of Defense in the early years of the Vietnam War. I joined the bank in 1994, and James Wolfensohn became president in 1995. Wolfensohn was a charismatic leader who recommitted the organization to poverty reduction as its primary goal. The Soviet Union collapsed in December 1991, and the bank, along with other international organizations like the UN and the International Monetary Fund, had 15 new countries in the former Soviet Union, the FSU, 6 new countries from the former Yugoslavia, and a ton of work to integrate Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union into the world economy. A Sovietologist and economist who had lived in Moscow in 87-88, worked for the U.S. Census Bureau on technical assistance during the end years of the Gorbachev period when the USSR opened up, and having written about income distribution issues in the USSR, I joined the bank to help the former Soviet Union join the world community of prosperous and democratic countries. Margaret Mead famously said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." In the Wolfensohn years, it was a heady experience to be part of a small group of bank staff trying to help the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe to transition. Some countries succeeded at this, while others did not. Russia today is not a democracy and has never really been one. But changing the world is not that easy a thing to do, even though I do believe deeply that it can be done, and I know it has been done. The life of a World Bank staffer is not a commitment that everyone can or should make. The frequent international travel meant a lot of nights weeping in hotel rooms after talking to my children on the phone, causing me to reflect on trying to save the children of others while leaving my own behind. My older daughter, Vivian, would tell me, "I don't like that Russian. I don't like it when you speak that Russian." As she rightly associated, hearing Russian on the phone meant another trip there. My younger daughter, Kelly, would cling to my leg as I tried to leave the house for the taxi waiting to take me to Dulles, begging me not to go. I would cry all the way to Dulles. Then I would cry for another 16 or so hours on the plane or transiting airports. But I kept getting on those planes because I felt I could both mother my children and help the children of others through setting up social programs to identify and help the poor. And the advent of video chatting and finding the right partner who could help with our 3 children in our new blended family while I traveled helped a great deal. I branched out to work on Latin America and then Africa, in addition to the Europe and Central Asia region. I managed to team with others to do some great projects. I wrote a lot of good analysis of poverty and social protection in Russia and Turkey, in Ukraine, Hungary, Moldova, Kosovo, Swaziland, Botswana, South Africa. There's a program in Turkey for the mothers of poor children to receive small cash payments, provided their kids stay in school and that preschoolers go to health clinics. This program means that 5 million children are living a better life, and that the original idea for this conditional cash transfer program actually came from me. But that spark would have gone nowhere without key people on the Turkish side, and required a huge number of Turks to implement, as well as a small bank team. Once Jim Wolfensohn left the bank's presidency in 2005, subsequent presidents failed to follow his legacy. My own career stagnated along with the bank, and the frenetic excitement of the early transition years faded as I worked on countries that had been poor since independence and were still poor 40 years later. I was committed as ever to the dream of a world free of poverty, but I did not like the direction the bank was going. Its new slogan is now, end extreme poverty within a generation and boost shared prosperity. In 2009, the Frank Batten School of Leadership and Public Policy graduated its first class of Masters of Public Policy students. And in August 2010, I resigned from the bank and began teaching 80% time at the university as a commuter. And in August 2014, we moved and I transferred my membership from the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Rockville to TJMC UU. After nearly 20 years, it was a big decision to leave my permanent staff position and a very tight community of people who intentionally did the development work. But I realized that the best way that I personally could continue to fight poverty was to train the next generation of development workers. And I realized I did not always have to be the one to get up on the plane, that others, and particularly younger people, could and should.
Wow, right? Okay, so I know that some of you are saying, you're just trying to make me feel guilty because I'm not doing enough. Well, I'm not. I'm really not. I know that most of us, me too, aren't the intentional community type, and most of us haven't had the kind of opportunities that Janine has had to make a difference. So, what about us? Well, I asked the worship weavers to brainstorm, and here's a partial list of ideas that we can do. Attend a rally, or start one. Raise your own awareness about important issues and then help raise other people's. Vote. Have you all registered? I'll let you answer that question, but by next week I want to know. Run for office yourself. And we've had several members over the years who served as Charlottesville's mayor, most recently Satyendra Ahuja. Support the work of the UUSC, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, by becoming a member. And if you want to know how, talk to Edith Good and she can tell you everything. Sign up to be a UU Chalice Lighter, a program that leverages small donations from UUs to generate large grants for congregations in need. Volunteer your time for a good cause. And you don't even need to leave the church to do that. Pachem, Impact, the Soup Kitchen, the Food Pantry, the Meal Packets, the Book Bash in the fall, the Giving Tree. I think you get the idea. You could be one of the people the Caring Connection can call on to bring food to somebody who needs it. Connect with people of other belief systems and cultures. It was really heartening to see how many of us accepted the invitation and experienced the warm welcome of the folks at the Islamic Center not that long ago. You can model in this congregation what we want the world to look like. Healthy communication and assuming good intentions of one another are two good examples of that. Parents, you can raise the next generation to be better than this one. I could go on. There are so many possible ways that we can be of help. There are as many ways as there are people in this congregation, and more even. Now, I know lists like that can be overwhelming, too many possibilities and too many causes vying for too little time and energy. I get that. I got overwhelmed writing that list. But McKenna Breding Goodrich wasn't overwhelmed by all of the need around her. She focused in on one thing. She went door to door in her Phoenix neighborhood, asked for coats, jackets, hoodies for homeless people. This past December 12th, she dropped off 1,000 of them to the Phoenix Rescue Mission. Oh, and I forgot to mention, McKenna is in seventh grade. 12-year-old Blair Gooch wanted to do something after seeing a picture of a child crying on a news report about the earthquake that devastated Haiti. He used the power of social media and soon was able to send 25,000 teddy bears to Haiti, with another 22,000 that he gave to other nonprofits. The next year, he decided to turn his sights to collecting toys and school supplies. After Charlie Kuhn's older brother returned from volunteering in an orphanage in Jordan, she was moved by the stories he told her of the conditions there. She decided that something she could do was to make a fleece blanket from a kit, and she asked some of her friends to help her. Soon, the other sixth graders at her school, as well as some other local volunteers, were able to send off a package of 50 blankets. She didn't want to stop, so she founded HELP. Hope, encouragement, love, peace. And that group has now sent over 700 blankets to orphanages in 9 countries. And did I say that she was 11 when she started that? 10-year-old Tyler Page saw an episode of the Oprah Winfrey Show about children in Ghana being sold into slavery for as little as 20 U.S. dollars. He and some friends got together, put on a car wash, and raised enough to save 5 children. Tyler then asked his mom to help him, and the nonprofit that he created has since raised more than $50,000, rescuing more than 650 Ghanaian child slaves. Are you noticing a theme here? I had to eventually stop searching the internet for stories because there are just so many stories of young people who have not yet learned that really, after all, there's only so much one person can do, or that the world has so many problems that anything I might do is just a drop in the bucket. Both of those things are true, of course, but these children didn't know that that was supposed to stop them. So there are two things I want all of us, again, us, to notice in these stories. First, as I said, the kids didn't worry about any of the things so many of us worry about. They just went ahead and did something. They did one thing and tried to make a difference in that area. So that's a lesson for us. Just do something. Anything. Just get started and do it. Don't worry about all the other things that need to be done. Do that thing. Here's the second lesson. None of them did these amazing things on their own. Yes, 4-year-old Alexandra Scott opened a lemonade stand to raise money for doctors like the ones who were helping her with the neuroblastoma that she'd been battling since she was 1. But the $2,000 that she raised wasn't because her lemonade was that good. It was because people heard about what she was doing, and what they did to help was to make a contribution to help her out. Alex Scott died at the age of 8. But the effort she began is now Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, and it has raised more than $1 million toward cancer research. She didn't do it alone. Nobody ever does it alone. Not really. And that means that you and I don't have to either. In fact, you and I don't even have to start anything ourselves. We can simply lend our support to those who have. But in whatever way we can be part of building the better world we so deeply desire. That desire is part of our Unitarian Universalist DNA. It's part of what it means to be a people of desire.